It's the Pop Manic Podcast for December 21st, 2016.
That was wonderful.
Bravo.
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good, though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away.
Hey, boo.
Boo.
It's the Pop Manic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out, over and out. I'm Jeremy, and joining me today are...
Amanda.
Bill.
Sarah.
Mike.
Clem Marie. No, this is Brian. Of course I'm going to talk. It's the last podcast.
Evil Robot has become is shown his human form.
Yeah. What are we talking about, guys?
Stuff.
Oh.
Movies. We like them. You like them. Let's talk about our favorites of the year. For good measure, we'll probably throw in some other flickering pictures, like TV shows. Mm-hmm. And so this is our farewell episode, our last hurrah, our last chance to find the rails we've so often gone off. Will we find them?
Number three.
Hey, Brian, are you Brian?
Oh, yeah.
I believe your name is Brian. Welcome to the show. What slow-moving piece of Euro trash are you interested in?
Well, you're fired.
I'm going to recommend a 10-hour art piece where you just focus on a rock.
I like rocks.
I like this guy, Joe.
It's called pain.
He's kind of the anti-Matthew Barney. He's like Matthew Barney is too narrative.
Read by Dylan Thomas in the original Gaelic.
Yes. So, I mean, oh.
That'll be my number one, guys.
Spoiler alert.
So, but some artsy-fartsy stuff that are on my, like, should have been on the best of list. Embrace of the Serpent, which came out last year, but I saw it on DVD from the library this year. Go see that movie. It's amazing. It's everything that Altered States should have been.
Ooh.
And then also Moonlight. If you haven't seen Moonlight, it's in theaters now. It's probably not at the Belcourt anymore, but it might be in other theaters. I'm sure the library will get it on DVD. An amazing movie. The best soundtrack of the year, Moonlight. Check it out. But my number three, I'm going to continue my tradition of last year of talking about free stuff you can get on the internet. So if we're talking about stuff you can watch, it's going to be a YouTube channel. It's The Terrain Tutor with Mel. So Mel is a war game terrain maker. Now, wargaming, where you paint miniatures and make them fight, is a time and money black hole that I want to have nothing to do with. But now, why would I recommend this channel? Because he builds things out of plastic, paper, glue, felt, X-Acto knives. So if
glitter?
You,
is there glitter?
You, sometimes.
Yes!
Yes. But there's a lot of texturing. Mm-hmm. So if you do anything in your life that involves cutting things with scissors, X-Acto knives, paper, felt, foam core, carpet, in any way, if you do craft in any way, if you scrapbook, if you... build models, if you do dioramas and that, all kind of stuff that happens a lot in my household, actually, with me and my partner. And he talks about what kind of knives and fabrics and blades and all different kinds of glue you can use to make stuff. So if you like are a maker, hacker person, The Terrain Tutor is an awesome channel. Well, he will teach you about how to use all these things. When he's on, it's just like Bob Ross. You can just sit there and watch him zone out. It's amazing.
Happy trees.
So the last thing that he did was, now this is actually a little specific, but it was still fun to watch, was how to make model farm fields. And he's talking about how to do carpet squares and how to paint it to how to look like it actually look like rows, because carpets already have the rows in them a lot of the times. And then where to go and how to get them for cheap, and then how to mount them in different ways and then paint them different ways. And all the materials that he uses, you will learn all about them. So I have learned more about glue than I ever learned huffing glue in high school.
Well done.
By watching this guy's channel, Mel, The Terrain Tutor. Amanda.
Okay, so it's been well established that I don't, finger quotes, watch movies or go to the theater.
I do seem to recall you recommended a trailer last year.
Yes, I did.
But this is your number one movie.
Yeah, it's because I'm cheap. Now, I will admit, I have watched a handful of movies this year that were good, like Paper Moon with Ryan O'Neal or Deadpool, which I mentioned 2 weeks ago.
That's a hell of a double feature.
That's what I'm
talking about, actually.
But these don't really compare to some of the really good TV shows I've been watching this year. So for this best of list, I'm picking my favorite TV shows. And number three is Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which I mentioned a couple weeks ago. Now, as a former Gleek, this show was definitely on my must-see list. I read about it initially after it first came on the CW, I guess, 2 Octobers ago. But I'd already missed the first episode, and I knew that I wanted to watch it, so I didn't want the spoiler, and I wanted to watch it in order. So the premise is Harvard lawyer Rebecca Bunch, played by show creator Rebecca Bloom, freaks out at her high-powered New York lawyer job after running into her ex on the street, and she decides to follow him home to West Covina, California. Rebecca loves musicals, and the characters will randomly break into song throughout the show. It's cheesy and funny, and I really enjoyed watching it. There are times when the writing goes for the easy cliche, which I find annoying and why this show is number three and not number one. But the library has all of season one, so you can get caught up on DVD. Season two just started this past October, but I think I'm going to wait until the DVDs come out so I can binge it all at once.
My number three pick is called The Witch, a supernatural thriller that takes place in 1630s New England. A devout Christian family is living in the wilderness, and their life is turned upside down when their infant vanishes. A witch may have had something to do with it. This movie is great, chilling, atmospheric movie written and directed by Robert Eggers. Special mention to the actress Anna Taylor-Joy, who plays the eldest child, The Witch. Sarah.
Nice. I think the soundtrack of that movie scared me more than the movie, but I did like it. Okay, so my number three. Like the rest of this year, I have to say that the movie releases this year were mostly meh overall. Mm-hmm. It could just be that I haven't seen most of the best releases yet, but of what I have seen, I had a hard time narrowing down one movie that was standout amazing that simply said, bye Felicia, to all other movies around it. I'm not saying all movies that were released this year were awful, but mostly nothing really wowed me yet. Rogue One is in theaters, but I've yet to see it. I have high hopes there, but until then, I give you my number three movie of the year as Deadpool.
Yay!
As already mentioned, yes. As the great Lorelai of Gilmore Girls once said, something along the lines of something being as forgetful as every Marvel movie made. Was it Roy's boyfriend she was referring to? I honestly can't remember.
I don't remember her saying it,
and I was like, that is a fact. Anyway, that's generally how I feel, too. Of all the superhero movies made recently, I can't keep up with who's what and what comes shooting out of whose bodies.
Whoa!
I like the movies.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's the last episode.
Excelsior!
I like the movies, but I'm not a comic book nerd, so it's hard to keep track of everyone. If I've offended anyone by saying that, send your hate mail care of Evil Robot. But back to the movie. Deadpool is a movie that easily set itself apart from the rest of the pack. Sure, that's mostly because of how R-rated the movie is, but it's also because of how badass Ryan Reynolds was as this character. He is his typical goofy self on top of having forced experimental powers to heal quickly, or something like that. The movie came out February of this year. Perfect time for Valentine's Day, I thought.
It was our Valentine's movie. That's what we went to see.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
And the best part, the movie and Reynolds were both nominated for Golden Globes.
And they won.
Did they?
Yeah, they both did.
Oh, nice. Well, I've...
Or no, it was Critics' Choice, I think they won.
Yeah, Critics' Choice, yeah.
I knew they just won something.
Golden Globes was nominated, like, a couple of days ago.
I was going to say, did I miss that?
Yeah.
They won something, so it was, like, I think it was Critics' Choice. I think it was Golden Globes.
Yeah, it was nominated for Best Comedy Golden Globe, which is surprising.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. And
because it's awesome.
Yeah. What other Marvel movie has done that?
Who knew when he first appeared in New Mutants 98 that was going to happen?
Take that, Iron Man.
Exactly. The other best news is that the library has this movie, so do yourself a favor and definitely check it out.
Watch it 4 times.
That's right. My.
Oh, yeah. Runners up that I don't mention later. movies, Neon Demon, Under the Shadow, Too Late, and there's another good one. Oh, yeah. The Black Coat's Daughter, which comes out next year. Yeah, see, okay. So, long-time listeners of the show, my favorite thing I can never use again. Now I can say it in public and be all like, hey, IRL person, long-time listeners, They look at me blankly. Long-time listeners of the show know that I love me some sci-fi thinky-boobies, especially thinky-boobies where the aliens actually act alien and not some sort of analog to the colonization of the Americas. Think about it, y'all. In Arrival, giant alien spacecraft suddenly hover all over the world one day. Apparently one per major country. Amy Adams is a linguist tasked with deciphering their language. It mostly looks like when you, like, leave a Coke on, like, a book and it leaves that ring. That's their language.
Whoa.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, there's, like, zillions of different variations on, like, circle that looks like a stain. And they don't talk. It's all, like, visual. It's very cool. There's a lot of plot, and I don't want to spoil the awe and the wonder. Good science fiction to be, at least to be, is like a mystery. Where instead of, like, a murder, you're constantly trying to guess, like, what's going on? This is where we had it in spades. And I also liked that the science in this science fiction movie was linguistics. Something you don't really like, you know.
Hmm.
Pretty neat. We have Jeremy.
Long time listeners. My number three favorite movie of the year was O.J. Made in America. This is a documentary produced for ESPN. It showed in some theaters, I think, but it was broadcast over several nights on ESPN because it is nearly 8 hours of gripping, heartbreaking, infuriating insight into race in America, as seen through the funhouse mirror of the 1994 arrest and the 1995 murder trial of Orenthal James Simpson. It's not a tabloid, because when I first heard about it, I thought, who wants to go down this road again? But it's not a tabloid expose with new evidence exonerating the juice, or a Room 237 style exploration of how the Naked Gun movies are an admission of his guilt.
I see how Nordberg looks blankly in this scene. That's where he's thinking about killing his wife.
The queen. I must kill the queen. That's Nicole.
Whoa.
Yeah, see? Mind blown.
Wow.
Hey, it's Enrico Palazzo.
Let's just do Naked Gun jokes.
The guy that says that is the guy that plays Francis in Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
What?
That's right. This, instead of all those things I just said, this is an exhaustive look at systemic racism in Los Angeles, its role in the O.J. murder trial, and it's sort of how that plays out in the – it's a microcosm of the macrocosm of how it plays out in America. I really didn't want it to end. It was so gripping. I mean, I watched it over the course of a couple of nights, and it is heartbreaking and infuriating and fascinating.
Number two.
Brian?
All right, back on track. My number two. Not number two is I Second the Witch. It's an awesome movie. I should have put that on my list. Okay, so my real number two, I'm going to do a TV show. That is Mr. Robot. It's out on USA Network. In particular, I'm going to say season one because I think season two kind of went off the rails. But season one, which I watched this year on DVD from the library, is fantastic. It's everything I wanted the X-Files to be. It's about a hacker that successfully takes down the financial system in the United States. That's what season one of The Robot is about. It works like a mini series from the UK. It's like one story told in 10 episodes, and it's amazing. And the lead is an Egyptian gay man. God bless America. Amanda.
That's how you throw it to me? All right. So my number two is the TV show Empire. Now, of all the shows I thought might be in this slot, I never would have bet on Empire. This was supposed to just be a thing we did for the podcast and then move on. Longtime listeners will remember that last year we did an episode on Empire and musicals. So I binged all 12 episodes of season one in one weekend. Thank you, Comcast. But I wasn't completely in love with it. I enjoyed it, but it was fine. So when the library got season two on DVD, I wanted to at least check it out. And dang it, now I'm hooked. So I finished season two in October, and I really didn't want it to be over. Now, I think that I enjoy it so much because I have a very solid soap opera watching background past.
Oh, did you hear that the guy that played Stefano died?
Oh, yeah,
you
did.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Are you
not
a Days of Our Lives person?
I'm a CBS girl. Oh,
okay.
So.
All right. I'm an ABC girl.
I watch Days. I'm really
My mom
still
watches
General
Days.
Hospital. Get it right.
No.
General Hospital, One Life to Live.
That's right.
Yeah, same here.
I mean, yep, nice. I watch nothing.
Sorry.
Okay, so anyway, so at its heart, that's what Empire is. It's a soap opera. In fact, in one episode, the family moves into this big house with a grand staircase, and I thought, hey, that's a great staircase for someone to fall down, and sure enough, like two episodes later, boom, somebody fell down the staircase. So now I'm just waiting for the evil cloned Russian twin to show up, and then my life will be complete. I did want to do give a shout out to Cookie Lyon, who's played by Taraji P. Henson. I love her. She's my new Scarlett O'Hara. The other fun fact is that this show is created and produced by Danny Strong, who you may recognize as being Doyle from the Gilmore Girls.
Oh,
so,
nice.
I would never have put him in the Empire world, but apparently That's a thing now. So, Empire, Watch it.
You may be the only person that's ever said, thank you, Comcast.
That's about the only reason I would ever say it, too.
Yeah, yeah. I set them on fire.
That's fantastic.
All right, Bill.
My number two pick is The Green Room. And The Green Room is a gritty thriller about a punk rock group that has a gig at a bar in a remote Pacific Northwest. The club is run by a neo-Nazi, and the punk rock group witnessed a murder that happens, and it's a night of trying to survive the evening. So, The Green Room is an edgy thriller that stars Anton Yelchin in one of his last roles, and just to put it bluntly, The Green Room is a damn good movie.
Yeah.
Sarah.
It's pretty terrifying. I wonder if we'll hear about it again.
Anton Yelchin, he's the guy that was the Russian guy in Star Trek?
Yeah, okay. He died tragically earlier.
Yeah, I remember.
Crushed by his car.
Yep. All right. Well, my number two choice is a movie that came out last year, but I watched it this year, so that still counts.
Okay, totally counts.
Brooklyn came out last November and sadly didn't win any Oscars. I discussed this movie and book earlier this year, earlier being a couple of months ago when I joined the podcast. But as a recap, the story follows a young Irish girl, Ailish, in the 1950s.
You have to say it like that.
It's just stuck. I was waiting for it.
Ailish.
I didn't even see it. That's all I know about it.
And when you see the name, you're just going to be totally lost. It's like, it looks nothing like it's pronounced.
Oh, yeah.
Nope. Yeah, like the rest of Irish names. Yep.
I just want to say Ailish for a couple of times.
She is sent from her home to start a new life in New York City, as there doesn't appear to be anything promising in her small town in Ireland. Living in a boarding house and working at a department store, Ailish struggles at first with homesickness and also learning how to live in a different world. But all that mostly disappears after Ailish meets a young Italian fella and falls in love. I think I'm stuck in an Irish accent right now.
It's what the movie does.
Yeah, it does.
That's the best part of the movie.
However, home is not so far away. When tragedy strikes, Ailish has to choose between the new life she's created for herself or to return home to her family. I loved this movie. The adaptation of the book was pretty spot on. Saoirse Ronan's portrayal of Ailish was perfect, as well as newcomer Emery Cohen's as love interest Tony. The movie has several other big-hitting actors as well, with Domhnall Gleeson, Julie Walters, and Jim Broadbent. It was almost like a Harry Potter reunion. And to fall in love with the movie as I did, the library has it available to check out today. Mike, let's surprise us.
Well.
But this movie we've never heard of before.
Hang on. I was thinking of doing TV shows that I watch, you know, briefly, like Runners Up, the thing before. Like Ash vs. Evil Dead. It's awesome.
Yes, Brooklyn, it is.
Yeah. And Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And
have you seen Stand vs. Evil?
No. Ooh, that could be good. And I just started a show called Man Seeking Woman, which is high hilarious. And I watch Modern Family, but I'm kind of...
I never could get into that one.
It's, you know...
It seems like it's trying too hard.
Funny. Yeah, it's like some episodes funny, other episodes I'm just like, why am I watching this? Anyway, so you'll never guess what my number two is, Kay. Hint, it's Ailish's favorite color. musically enough, I put Jeremy Saulnier's last movie, Blue Road, in my number two spot. I think it's 2014. Hey! All right. Green Room. It's about a punk band traveling the country that gets booked in a club full of skinheads, despite one of the members being Jewish and them singing a song that disses Nazis. The show goes reasonably well, but afterwards they piss off the murderous owners of the club and are then continuously besieged in the green room backstage. Poor Anton Yelchin is really fantastic as a de facto leader of the band, and Patrick Stewart, you know, Captain Picard himself, or Gurney from Dune, like me and Brian.
Mood's a thing for cattle and love play, not fighting.
Radiates menace as the head of the skinheads. It's kind of like a horror movie, but instead of lame-o zombies attacking a house, it's a bunch of skinheads attacking a concert venue. I, for one, was on the edge of my seat the whole time. Mm-hmm. I'm also curious about what Saulnier's next color-coded genre-related project could be. Science fiction movie Orange Crush. Romance movie Red Valentine. Western Orange Sky.
Ooh.
Ooh. Same. Ooh. Yeah. What do you think?
Skinheads are terrifying.
They're scary. What do you think? What do you got, Salmon Color Jeremy?
Well.
Did
you say Salmon Color Jeremy? Wow. I do sleep on a bed of rice. What do you serve salmon with? I have no idea. My number two favorite film of the year was also Green Room.
Hey.
So Mike on the podcast in 2014 said, long time listeners, Fish Posh, Blue Ruin. And I was like, what's this Blue Ruin? I didn't see no Blue Ruin. So I watched it one night and I was like, this movie is great. I love this movie. So I was very excited to see another guy named Jeremy's primary colored follow-up. So I was like, oh, what's the next movie going to be? And then I heard Patrick Stewart is playing the leader of a group of white supremacists. And I was like, I'm stoked. I don't like white supremacists. And that's what the term alt-right means. But I still want to see this movie with Patrick Stewart playing a bad guy. So, Anton Yelchin is the bassist of a band called The Ain't Rights. They see a murder in the green room after the show. And then they open their set, I think one of you alluded to it, with the dead Kennedys, Nazi punks, f*** off, which is a great tune.
Mm-hmm.
Also, so then it's kind of like a locked room mystery where there is like it all sort of takes place. The whole movie almost takes place in that one building and then specifically in that one room. And then, you know, it kind of branches out from there. But and like all the like the improvised weapons, it's like a escape movie, you know, and then there's dogs.
Yeah, those dogs are like the scariest. Yeah. Like, you know, you don't really think, hey, it's a dog. You know, dogs are scary, yeah. Man.
I mean, it plays like a horror movie, yeah. Kind of, you know. But it really is. It's like very gripping. And it's like a great cast, too. It has Leah Shawkat from Arrested Development is in it, too. And Imogen Poots.
The dude who was in Blue Ruin was the sidekick of Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, absolutely. It was really, really, really exciting movie. And the cover is sort of like a play on the cover of The Clash's London Calling album with that has the bassist smashing his bass. And so it has like Anton Yelchin kind of in the same kind of pose. So that was a clever tip of the cap.
Number one.
Brian?
All right, my number one. Now, if anyone knows me knows that what this already is, but my favorite movie of the year was Neon Demon. It was my most anticipated movie of the year. I was super excited about this movie. It's me, so it's totally not safe for work and totally hard to explain what it is about. But typically, it's about a young model that goes to California from Georgia. She becomes the hot new IT model, but then she discovers that the modeling industry in Los Angeles is actually sinister and evil beyond ways that are speakable.
Very dog-eat-dog.
And
literally.
The person I think that plays the lead is actually Dakota Fanning. And
it's not Dakota Fanning, it's Elle Fanning.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Oh. Fanning's sister.
Thank you. Fanning.
Fanning's cross.
I don't like Fanning at all, and the movie worked far better for me for that reason. Because I think the real star of the show is Jenna Malone, who plays the witch / makeup artist. What her role is with the other models, how she enables them or leads them or is led by them, is totally up in the air, and it's completely fascinating. It is slow, but so visually stunning as to not be boring. Keanu Reeves is in it playing the creepiest, the creepiest person you've ever seen him play.
Wow.
Ever.
And
also, the soundtrack was just totally amazing. Well, I was going to say the soundtrack, it was the score. The score written by Cliff Martinez, whose scores I've talked about on the past with Nicholas Winding Refn's movies in particular. I've talked about how much I love them and, like, their collaborations just keep getting better. Inside the horror film community, a lot of people are comparing this to the movie Starry Eyes, if any of you have seen that. I just think that's really apples to oranges. I mean, it's about the same things, like the negative effects of beauty culture, but I just feel like Starry Eyes is my little hometown library in Bucksthorpe, Pennsylvania, compared to like the Oxford Library. It's like just the budget and the scope of what they can achieve is just like so much better. And I think Neon Demon is just like way more sinister and sexual. And I love it. It's great. And like all of Nicholas Winding Refn's movies, it's controversial and split critics. It split the critical worlds that I'm into, the horror movie world and like feminist critics world, and that probably means it's powerful and good.
Did you like Only God Forgives?
I did, which yeah. One really liked
it was
at
his
all.
Number one movie of whatever year.
So the only it's number two. Yeah, awesome. It's I did it again. I picked another one of that guy's movies.
I had trouble getting into that one.
So the only person that I know that liked Only God Forgives was Patrick, who works here, who's married to someone from Thailand, and he told me that him and his wife watched that movie, and she was like, "Yeah, that's real Thailand."
And it was Jesus.
And, it's funny to this day. Patrick is funny as it's kind of weird. Patrick is always like, he always comes down to the popular materials department and talks to us about books and movies all the time. He has for years. Matter of fact, I've asked him to guest on the show, but it's never like worked out. But we're still talking about Only God Forgives. He comes to the desk and we still talk about that movie because there's.
I'm gonna have to watch that now.
Yeah,
he always recommends Thailand movies set in Thailand to me too. Since
I should watch
there,
it again
so
and then talk to him about it.
So
because I like Drive, you know, but I couldn't get into that one.
And you know what? I don't like Drive because it's a crime movie and those are boring. And
I like crime movies and I found Drive boring.
So I like.
Neon Demon's great, yo. I agree.
I've talked for too long. Amanda.
Well, before we go, Nick, he's supposed to direct Maniac Cop, written by Ed Brubaker. That'll be interesting.
Really? That sounds bonkers, yeah.
Amanda.
Wow.
Okay, well, speaking of cops, so my number one pick is the TV show Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Now, I hope the show goes on forever and ever because I will watch it. The library has the first three seasons on DVD. We got in season three over the summer, and I spent several glorious days watching it. Now, in the beginning, it took me a little bit of time to kind of get used to the acquired taste that is the cast. But now that I'm in the know, I totally love them. Sandberg is at his creative best in the series. His SNL videos got nothing on the 9-9. Now, my favorite episode of season three was called 9 Days, and it's when Detective Jake Peralta, who's played by Andy Sandberg, and Captain Ray Holt, played by Andre Brower, get exposed to the mumps. They get quarantined together for 9 days, and Mike's laughing because he's seen it.
Oh, yeah.
So I laughed so hard in this episode, I literally about peed my pants. So season four started this past fall with a magic crossover episode with New Girl, and I can't wait to watch it, but I'm gonna, because I always wait till they all come out together on DVD, because that's what I do. But you should watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
You should. It's great.
It's all hilarious. Right.
Okay, my number one pick is Hell or High Water. This is a part modern-day Western and crime thriller.
Yeah.
A divorced farmer and his older brother, who's an ex-con, decide to rob banks in order to save the family farm. In hot pursuit is Texas Ranger Marcus Hamilton, played by the always great Jeff Bridges. You have no idea where this movie is going. It's extremely well written and directed. And Chris Pine, who plays the divorced father, shows he can do a lot more than William Shatner impressions. So, Hell or High Water. Great stuff, Sarah.
Nice. All right. Well, my number one choice is also a TV show. It shouldn't be much of a surprise if you've been paying attention. It's Netflix's show Stranger Things. Someday when I look back
waffles.
At this, do what?
Waffles.
Waffles, yes.
Eggos,
yes.
Can I have Eggos?
Someday when I look back at this crap show of a year, I'll remember that it wasn't all bad because this amazingness of a show came out this past summer. We discussed it several weeks ago, but in case our listeners weren't paying attention, here's what we said about it. The show is like an amalgamation of The Goonies and The X-Files involving, and I quote from my previous podcast, a missing kid, a different found kid, Dungeons and Dragons, and the government. And Eggos, of course. It's strange, hence the title. Creepy, dramatic, funny, and all around a suck-you-in-immediately type show that's thankfully only 8 episodes long. I say thankfully because I'd be awake all night watching it if it were any longer. And you may have heard, but the show plus leading actress Winona Ryder were nominated for Golden Globes. which, of course, they both deserve. Sadly, the library doesn't have this show, but that's because it's a Netflix original series. But here's to hoping it's released as a DVD soon, and the library will then most definitely acquire it.
My favorite thing about that, because when it came out, it didn't seem like there was a lot of hype for it, you know, but it's like started building. Yeah. And Brian was like, oh, that's good. You should watch it. And I said, oh, I didn't know. And he said it's like they took the podcast and they made a show about it. And I said, and he's like, there's something for everyone. And I said, even Amanda. And he said, it takes place in Indiana in the 80s. And I was like, oh my God.
I took place in Indiana in the 80s, but I have not watched this show.
It's so good.
It really is.
It's
good.
Worth it. Yeah.
It's good.
Yep.
It's one of the few things that does live up to the hype.
That's true. I hope the second season does too.
Yeah.
Mike is preparing his season. I don't want to bring you down card.
It's good.
Yeah. It's good.
Well, I mean, you know, when your Facebook feed gets covered for like 6 months about like your life will be changed, you'll rip off your face and put it on backwards after you see Stranger Things, and
that doesn't appeal to me.
My sister gets like a tattoo, like sleeve on her arm of like, you know, and of how awesome Stranger Things is, and she has flown to three states away to get a poster signed by half the cast.
Good Lord.
Wow. She has gone on road trips to find the restaurants and stuff in the show because it's filmed in Georgia but set in Indiana. And then I hear this all the time, and then I watch it, I'm like, that's okay, I guess, but you know.
I thought it was hilarious that it was supposed to be Indiana because it was way too hilly.
I was gonna say, if you've been to Indiana, it's pretty flat.
Rural Georgia is much more hilly. Clay.
I mean, the soil is different colors, but it's pretty close.
I was gonna say,
no one noticed.
Good Georgia clay. What the hell? I forgot to mention Handmaiden. That's a really great movie, but it's not on this list. So the Mike Brain can be split into adult and child. Adult Mike Brain gave up on Godzilla long ago, so I only go to please my inner child, who in turn spends most of the Godzilla movies going, when is Godzilla going to show up? I'm so bored. I want ice cream and cake for dinner. Let's stay up late watching Batman cartoons. Yeah! But for the first time since Godzilla 1954, both sides of my brain were riveted. Adult Mike can enjoy the commentary on how Japan's government is so tied up with bureaucracy that a giant monster attack would have to go through 50 meetings to approve one counterattack. Also, you know, Japan feeling very unimportant in this relationship with the United States. And the, ineffectiveness of the Self-Defense Force. And, you know, all that delicious intrigue and / poli-sci action. Wow, Child Mike could enjoy the Screeonks! Woohoo! And there are so many characters in the story that they don't have to crawl to a halt to focus on a handful of lame randos, you know, Takeda, our love is forbidden for there's a giant Godzilla attack. Oh, if only we could fall in love. I don't care. Where's the Godzilla? And of course, laser beam spines. Cool. Tears literally rolling down my face. I have a heart of stone watching the Futurama episode with the dog. But I see laser spines. Oh, waterworks. However, the mildest of spoilers, longtime Godzilla fans will be disappointed that there is no satellite dish laser tanks that Godzilla stomps. I miss laser tanks. What do you got, Jeremy?
So, did you actually say the name of the movie?
Oh, nope. Shin Godzilla is my number one. You guys should know.
Thank you. I knew what it was.
Thank you for pointing
out. Or Godzilla Resurgence, the much cooler original name.
It was his own movie. He was just
like Godzilla.
Whatever. Godzilla's great, guys. Yeah. Woo! Yeah! Cartoons! Ravioli! Woo!
Ravioli? Woo! Off-brand Pop-Tarts. That's my childhood.
Check. I want to try the orange crush one.
Oh.
That's on-brand Pop-Tarts.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah. There's a root beer one, too.
Yeah, well, that might go
Those
that
freak
much.
Me out. Like, I just feel like there's too much sugar.
There's no such thing as too much sugar.
There's no such thing as too much sugar.
That's bad. I used to take spoonfuls of sugar as my snack when I was get home from school.
We had a tin.
That's how I get the diabetes.
We had a tin in our kitchen that had like, it was like flour and salt and whatever, and there was one with sugar, and it said the sugar house, and you set them all up, and they look like a little street.
That's cute.
And there was a cup in there for the sugar. And like on Saturday nights when I wanted to stay up and watch the Freddy Krueger TV show and my mom was off at a sex toy party
Freddy's
across
the hall.
Freddy's
Nightmares in show correction.
I would like drink the sugar to try to stay awake. And I would just blah, 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 and then I would just
spends a lot.
Crash. I didn't know what caffeine was. So related to that, my number one film of 2016 is A Face in the Crowd. But Jeremy, this isn't 1957. because that's when this movie was released. Maybe it is, and maybe it isn't. So A Face of the Crowd, A Face of the Crowd was directed by Elia Kazan in 1957, and it was based on the Bud Schulberg novella Your Arkansas Traveler. These two collaborated on the waterfront previously. So here, Andy Griffith stars as Lonesome Rhodes, a drifter plucked from the drunk tank in small-town Arkansas to host a morning radio program. His homespun wisdom garners him a following, and soon he's catapulted to the big time in Memphis, and then to the even bigger time in New York. So he uses the power of the media first to sell a pep pill, then he turns his message of down-home wisdom into actual political power. And he's recruited to help turn a stick-in-the-mud senator into a pull-up-your-bootstraps go-getter who's ready for the White House. And then Rhodes becomes drunk with power, and the same thing that brought him to prominence brings him down. Now, this movie about a rough-talking outsider who rises to power thanks to the media might seem like science fiction to us today, but in 1957, it was really, really something. So watch Face in the Crowd and cry yourself to sleep.
He's got a weird hairstyle and, you know, treats his followers like scum.
And a lot of it was filmed here in Nashville.
And a lot of it was filmed here in Nashville, yeah. Hey guys, traditionally, what is it that we have done in the past on Tickle My Fancy? Well, maybe the library hasn't. Maybe the library doesn't. Either way, it's Tickle Our Fancy, Bill.
What he said, go.
Tickling My Fancy is a documentary called Out of Print. I'll read the Internet Movie Database synopsis, a documentary exploring the importance of the revival cinema and 35mm exposition is seen through the lens of the patron of the New Beverly Cinema, a unique and independent revival cinema in Los Angeles. I really enjoy this movie. I watched it on Amazon Prime, but you can stream it on our Hoopla.
What's it called?
Out of Print.
Out of Print.
Oh, cool.
That's cool.
That was a title, not the
I just wanted to go to Beverly. It sounded dreamy.
Editor's note. Great segue. No, really.
Well, let's see. For my Tickle My Fancy, I wanted to do my favorite animated movie of this year. With a few pretty decent animated films released this year, excluding Sausage Party, I'd like to recognize my favorite animated movie that came out this year.
I like Sausage Party.
I need to see that.
I didn't love it.
I've been to many.
My favorite animated film this year has been Moana.
Oh, very nice.
Did you see it?
Well, tough choice here, but it goes to Zootopia. My very close runner-up was Finding Dory, because for a sequel release 13 years later, it was actually pretty good. But Zootopia was something new and fresh when it comes to animated films, with a genius storyline accented by notable actors. Jennifer Goodwin, Snow White from Once Upon a Time fame, voices the ambitious bunny Judy Hopps that is trying to succeed as a cop in the big city. Tough as it might be. And my favorite, Jason Bateman, voices Nick Wilde, the sleazy fox that is out to make her job a little more difficult. It's cute and funny and, like I said, fresh as an animated film. Sad to say, it beats out The Secret Life of Pets. I saw this one in theaters as well and had such high hopes after those hilarious trailers, but I'm afraid the funniest parts were the ones in the trailers. But judge for yourself, because the library either already has all these movies or they're on order.
I really like Zootopia. That that bit at the
a little bit more politically, moral lesson than I would have cared for.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Well,
it got a little heavy with that. Yeah, but but
yeah,
I really
it was pretty heavy. Yeah.
I forgot about that part.
really.
It was 75% of the movie, but I didn't remember that.
Yeah,
no, it was cute.
I mean, there was
if you like really sit down and think about the analogs it was making, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
I just remember one scene where it was like, here's the heart of what, if in case you didn't get it already. But I just, the thing at the DMV with the...
That was
amazing.
Was that on the trailer when we saw Star Wars, do you remember? Or were you two in the bag?
it was Star Wars. He was waiting for Star Wars.
I really like that scene. It was really good. Mm-hmm.
Mike?
Sorry. Mine's not pop culture related, and I expect it to be fully cut, especially since I wasn't really sure what to write. But
it never stopped you before.
That is true. You know, I was pretty torn on what to recommend. You know, maybe I should recommend my actual favorite movie, but which is not Creepshow. Spoiler, but you'll never know now. And or I could recommend a song I listened to 3 or 4 years ago that I was really dying to recommend on the podcast, but we didn't have CD at the time.
I'm
but,
still dying to three or 4 years later.
Hey,
it's a good song.
It's a great song. But, you know, musical taste is like butts. Everyone has one and it's full of crap.
Wow.
Best thing that comes to mind, since this is the very last one we're ever going to do, and I have this feeling that I'm never going to do a podcast again because it requires work. And if one thing you take away from the mic is, I don't like to work. So, Basically, hey gang, we're up here to do revisit the first thing I recommended this year, and that's if you there's something you always wanted to do, picture what it would take to do, and try to do it. Because, you know, when I started cooking, it was really daunting. I picked really easy recipes that tasted okay, and then I moved up. And now I tried more complicated things. Life's going good. I wanted to see Rev Stein in Chicago, and I thought about what I could do to get there. It was like a game, and I won. Haha. Points me. I'm kind of proud of myself. I made it alone across 5 states without getting shot or broke, which, you know, came close a couple of times. I have to see Washington, D.C. next year. Goals, gang. They changed lives. Why, just writing this out earlier made me realize that you know, I should become a writer like I dreamed, but like not care what other people think. That'd be cool. Oh.
Resist.
Oh, nice. No goals, y'all. Just stay in your same hole. Never dream. Stay in that gutter. What do you got, Jeremy?
What's funny is that's exactly what I was going to say. Stay in the gutter.
Mediocrity,
no goals.
It's for everyone.
Look, hey, look. That circle that's above us. There's light in that circle, but it's dark down here.
Darkness is where I belong.
Yeah. Everything sucks.
Then you die.
Yeah.
Wow.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, Jeremy.
Tickling My Fancy is, I'm going to talk about a comic book, is The Vision. The Vision, Volume 2, Little Better Than a Beast. By Tom King, Gabriel Hernandez Walta, Michael Walsh, and Jordi Belair. So this is the second volume of this series, its final volume, I believe. It is really, really good. The android who looked good in a sweater in the latest Captain America movie is right back where he belongs on the comic book page. And this really sort of, the Vision creates a family of other people, android people, robot vision android people. And they live out in the suburbs in D.C. And then so there's like some like family drama, but then also like this existential stuff of like, I'm a robot. And then there's also like, hey, the Avengers are coming to town.
Casual murder.
Yeah, casual murder. So it really sort of, it has like the coldness and the distance, emotional distance of an android, but then also like the depths of human tragedy. And the two volumes are really great. And I'm reading the second one now. And I love it. Bermanda.
Okay, so initially my last Tickle Fancy was going to be a biography of Dame Maggie Smith, but when I started reading it, it was horrible.
Oh, but she's great.
I know, I love her, but the book was so bad.
Aww.
So instead I'm going to go with a movie I just recently saw and loved. It's kind of cheating because I already talked about Andy Samberg and his brilliant crazy skills, but you ain't seen nothing until you've seen pop star Never Stop, Never Stopping.
Oh, yeah.
So the basic premise is that Samberg, a.k.a. Connor for real, finds fame with his friends as a Beastie Boy wannabe in a Beastie Boy wannabe band. And then he goes solo, of course, like you do. And he becomes the next big thing in music, and his ego grows with his fame, and then comes the downward VH1 behind the scenes spiral. So, Samberg is hilarious. It's a caricature of every famous male pop star ever. But my favorite part of the movie is all of the cameos. Some like Questlove or Nas or Usher play themselves, but we also get to see Joan Cusack and Tim Meadows, because yeah, that's nice. Will Arnett, Sarah Silverman, and then JT as Connor's personal chef slash fish singer.
I wondered if he was in it.
My favorite is the bit where like Seal gets mauled by wolves.
Yes!
Oh my god.
Yes, it was.
Get in the car, Seal! No!
So I laughed out loud several times, and then I watched it again. So I can't say enough good things about this movie, and I'm so glad that I found something so classy and pop-tastic to talk about for my last pop-matic segment, because after all, that's what this podcast has been about.
That's right.
Class?
Pure class.
Yes, that's right.
100%.
Not class. Toilet jokes and puns. Corrections. You guys got any?
I'm good.
I've got quite a list. Mike, why don't you go first?
Okay, this stretches back to my very first episode because it's the last whatever. So
it may take a minute.
All right, so Broadway darling Lin-Manuel Miranda is going to adapt Patrick Rothfuss's The Name of the Wind / Kingkiller Chronicles to a movie series. I, of course, recommended it during the college episode. As always, I have my finger on the pulse of what's cool.
Tack, the game in that book series, is a real game now by a real designer.
Yeah, see, yeah. See, wow. See, see. You know, you guys look at me like, why do you have a book called The University or whatever? And I'm all like, you guys. Anyway, the more upbeat Cavern of Antimatter song I alluded to in the music episode, or I was going to recommend to on the music episode last week, was Melody and High Feedback Tones. It would have been my number two. It actually came out in 2016, but we don't have Cavern of Antimatter anywhere, not even on Hoopla. Sad face.
Sad face.
The best nonfiction book I read this year that I alluded to in some of the previous episode is Eisenhower's Soldier and President by Stephen Ambrose. It's great. I've been on an Ike mood the past couple weeks. Yeah. During the Mother's Day episode this year, I alluded to a podcast that I was going to recommend, but which reminded me of my mother's love of old-timey movies. That podcast is You Must Remember This. Host creator Longworth focuses on various topics in Hollywood's first century, mostly actress-related. If you want to know where I get my making allusions to things that you don't understand and you don't care about, I get it from my mother, who would tell me about, like, hey, have you heard about Rita Hayworth? And I'd be like, I don't care, Mom.
Love you.
You're the best. Some Shocktobers ago, I mentioned I was thinking of recommending the best horror stories of Carl Edward Wagner. But while The Three Forests of the first book is really good, it's not good enough to recommend. Wah, wah. And on my very first episode of the Popmatic podcast, we were supposed to read The Life of Pi. I still haven't read it, but the movie's good.
Okay.
That was your first episode, was The Life of Pi episode?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you came back for more?
I just sat here and watched you guys talk about it for like 20 minutes, freaking out because I was supposed to have read it apparently and I didn't.
You didn't miss anything.
Now for something more contemporary.
You know me.
The song at the beginning of last week's episode was Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo by Rick Derringer. This is also known as Evil Robot's Revenge.
Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo.
Rock and Roll. It's also performed by Edgar or Johnny Winter. I'm not sure.
I can never tell.
Future Correction.
I should make a lot of mistakes.
Yeah. The band Cadaver is spelled Cadaver, see above, Evil Robot's Revenge, because Mike said, hey, this is band Cadaver, which is spelled C-A-D-A-V-E-R.
I kept calling it Abracadaver in my brain, but that's I think they're going with a pun here.
Okay. Excellent. The Missy Elliott song that everyone parodies, which seems like we've done it before, maybe, is called "Work It." I think we might have worked that out, but maybe not entirely. The Fifth Harmony song that they did, which was in the Hershey's Caramels commercial, is called "Worth It." That was it. Joe Esposito sang the song "You're the Best," which is the hard rockin' theme from The Karate Kid.
Hells yeah.
Also, Evil Robot said "Encapsulate." About Clemery's time on the podcast, instead of encapsulate, he left the S out there. And then also we have a longish, I'm just going to read this quote from Clemery as a correction. I could do it maybe in her voice.
Oh, no.
Yes! I do have a correction. I do have a correction, or rather a come to Jesus point of order. The way we were talking R.E. Kanye West hospitalization and mental health struggles, it was disparaging of those who struggle with their mental health and may sometimes need intensive care, up to and including a hospital stay. Sometimes you just have to keep yourself alive by any means necessary, including long-term medication and hospitalization. Kanye may be arrogant and abrasive, but he is a human being. I thought the conversation around that could have been more compassionate. I would agree with that, and I hate Kanye West. So that's probably true. Also,
I like Sucka MC.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I did write. I agree, even though I think Kanye West is a no talent hack, aka Sucka MC. So
judge him on his talent.
That's right.
His
yeah, he is entitled to be crazy.
And, he's got some catchy songs, but like he just seems like a jerk.
Yeah,
just a little bit.
Future presidential.
Yeah, 2024.
I'd vote for him over Donald Trump.
His poster will just say, "How can it get worse?"
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. We say that now.
Yeah. It's true. You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah. For more information about dystopias, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
You can catch us in reruns on iTunes, Stitcher, and the RSS.
The show was edited by an evil robot.
So this is our final episode. Keep in touch with us at the library or online. Next week!
Silence.
Silence. pure class.
Yes, that's right.
100%.
Not class. Toilet jokes and puns.
That's what I brought to the table. You recruited me for toilet jokes and puns. I delivered.
I was going to say, you brought them to the table, and I'm like, hey, look at all the stuff on the table. Look at all the stuff on the table.
I tried to touch it and smell my hand. Kim Gordon.
He's probably turned it off.
Did you turn it off yet?
No. Yes.
God damn. I was like, no one said Kim Gordon. Yeah. Oh, turn that and I'm going to be like, Kim Gordon.
Best moment of the day and Bill Booth day.
So I was talking to and, you know, he's grumpy all the time. And he's like, we're at this meeting at a branch, and I was like editing the podcast, and before the meeting, and he's like, "Oh, you doing that?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Yeah, it's the second to last one." And he's like, "Oh, yeah, that's too bad." He's like, "You know, really, it was better when it was once a month, which it was not, right, at all." Yeah. He's like, "Mike and Jeremy, you know, they just go off comic books. Who cares? You know what you guys should really do? Best of the year list. That's what you should do."
Wow. He just recently told you this?
All this stuff.
Oh yeah.
And I'm just like, "Yeah, you're right." How's Annie?